about them and to encourage them in their own growth. And that's another thing that I feel strongly about, is helping young people grow into good adults. And I have, myself, I've worked with a program of boys longer than I've worked here. Our church has a boys program that meets once a week. And we have games and crafts and stories, and I've got other men that work with me, and its purpose is to just help men grow into, help boys grow into solid men. And it does have a, certainly it does have a religious aspect. I do believe in following Christian principles, and that's what we try to teach them. So I do other things besides work here at the library, all of the, which I've spent a lot of time doing. And I was talking about my rabbits. The other thing that I've done for years is work on bibliography of children's author Thornton Burgess, and I did this bibliography. This was my graduate, sort of my graduate thesis, and a thesis can turn into something that has a life after a thesis, because I had mine published, and this is the second edition that was published in 2009. I described the works of Thornton Burgess, who wrote animal stories, and he was one of my favorite authors when I was a boy, and I know everything about every edition of every book he ever wrote, like how many pages it is and who drew the pictures and all those things. So there's lots of things to do in life. Just with that, I just found something nobody else knew anything about. You can become the expert in it if you find something nobody else knows about.
Was there a common theme in Thornton Burgess's books?
Yes, I think so. He was very interested in teaching people about wildlife. And he also put a little bit of moral values into each of his stories. He tried to teach his readers right and wrong through reading about animal characters who sometimes did wrong and how they learned from them. And he tried to teach not only about wildlife, but just how to be better citizens. And I guess I always appreciated that. Anyway, his books are ones that I've read since I was really small. I mean, I've always liked all kinds of children's books.
Do you have a collection of his books?
Yes, I certainly do. I've got a huge collection. Because in describing his books for my bibliography, I had to see them. And so I would collect them. I did see some very good collections, too. The State Library in Albany has a good collection. The Massachusetts Audubon Society has Burgess's own library that I looked at. But I collected a lot of them, so I have most of the editions of most of them.
Have you published any other works?
Yes, I have. I did a history of my church, which was interesting. Another one that I became the expert because I delved into it when nobody else did. And I've done two editions of that. I've done some articles on genealogical research because that's another thing that I do a lot. I trace family histories, and I started doing that in college because I thought I was going to make a chart showing my family, and I never did finish the chart because it just grew. I just kept finding more and more, and I've done it all the years. And sometimes you can translate these hobbies into something useful, and that skill of knowing how to do that research came in very handy in getting my job. I think Wendell Tripp saw that I knew how to do that, and that's one of the things that the customers that come to this library are looking for. They're looking for their own family roots, and it's good to have somebody on the staff that knows how to do it and can help them. So that, I think, is something I brought to the position, is helping people with genealogical research.
What kind of resources here at Neisha Library are there for genealogical research?
We've got a good collection of published family genealogies, which would be mostly New York State families. Lots of church records. tombstone inscriptions, newspapers. One of the collections that we worked hard at building is a census collection. We tried to get all of the census records available on upstate New York from the first federal census of 1790 up to the most recent one released. And New York State also took a census, besides the federal government taking one. And that was an interesting story, how we collected those. When New York State took a census, they left the originals with each county, so each county clerk kept the originals. And so they weren't in one place where you could get a copy. The only one that had a copy of them was the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints had sent field workers around to the county clerks and had microfilmed them. And they said they would sell copies of microfilm if you could get permission from the original record holder, because they felt that it was only fair that the original record holder should say whether they could copy their records or not. So we wrote to every county clerk in the state of New York to try to get them to give permission that we could buy the microfilm. And it took a long time to get every county clerk to respond with a yes, but we finally did, and we bought all the microfilm that we could of New York State census to add to what we had on the federal census. So we've got a really good representation of census records in one place. There aren't too many places that have all of it in one place, especially the state census. It was funny, the only county in the state that didn't give us permission at first was our own county, Otsego County. The county clerk didn't want to give permission because she thought that people would come to her to look at it and she'd get money from copies. So we had to wait for her term in office to be up, and then as soon as there was a new county clerk, we wrote to that one and said, would you give permission? And she said, yes, because if you have the film, then people can go there and look at it. They won't be wearing out the original record looking at it over here. You're more set up to have company come and look at it, visitors look at it, and we don't make that much income, so it won't be much of a loss of an income from it. So she gave permission, and we got that. That was one of the last ones we got. But, of course, being located in Otsego County, that's the one that people want to see the most. So we were very glad to get that. So that's, I think, one of the collections that's really good. And, of course, it's used for a lot more than family genealogists. It's just studying any community, looking for people, looking for information about communities. Graduate students use census records all the time when they're trying to find out something about a place.
How does Nisha serve other counties, like on the far sides of New York State?
I think any historical society tends to have more on the place where they are and less on the as far they get away, the further away they are. So we'd probably have less on Buffalo, Erie County, northern New York State. But we have the basic books on all the counties. What we can do, though, is find out where things are if we don't own them. We have ways of finding out what libraries have what, where manuscripts are. So if we don't have something, we can find out where somebody should go in other counties. So we do try to cover all counties as best we can, but we're better on our own area.
Do those other counties' historical societies work effectively with Nisha?
We do pretty well with local ones. I've been working hard at trying to cement relationships between Nisha and at least Otsego County historical societies. I've been trying to have meetings with the historical societies of topics that they're interested in, trying to get them here in the library. I do the same with the municipal historians. Little by little, we're trying to work with other counties. We've made some connections in Chenango County. So we try to serve them all, but we can serve locally better. Those are the people who can actually get here. I think one of the ways Nisha reaches out to people who can't come here is through publications. We publish New York history, so we can reach people with New York State history by publications. Putting things on the website would be another way, which the library has not done a lot of, but we have plans to put more in. That's something that's going to happen next year, is we're going to try to work with the Farmers Museum to put more documents online that people will be able to access through their own, through the website.
So you've lived in Oneonta your whole life.
Yes.
How has that experience been?
Hard to tell what it would have been like if I'd done something else, because I didn't do that, so I don't know. But I'm the kind of person who doesn't like a lot of big changes like that. I like to, when I get something, I stick to it, which is why I've been at NESHA 32 years and working with boys for 37 years and living in Oneonta all my life. I like the community. I mean, I don't have a big family, but I've got friends there, and I just would find it difficult to go somewhere else, which is why I think I was very fortunate to find this career nearby, so I can have a really good career without having to uproot myself and go somewhere else. I never wanted to move to Cooperstown, because Oneonta is a little bigger and my activities are there, but I get to experience Cooperstown during the workday and then go to another city, spend the rest of my life there.
Oneonta must have changed over these years. How has it changed in your lifetime?
Oneonta really grew as a railroad town. In the first part of the 20th century, that's what it was, basically. Most people would come from rural areas to Oneonta to work on the railroads. Immigrants would come. It was a big Italian population. Railroad was real important, and when I was young, it was still pretty important. The big roundhouse they had was already gone, but Oneonta was a big railway center. Trains were going through all the time. When I was quite young, they gave up having passenger transportation through Oneonta. You couldn't get a ride in a train to another place anymore. But trains are still important, but over the decades, that has dropped off a lot. So that's one big change. So the thing that keeps Oneonta an important place now is the two colleges that we have, Hartwick College and SUNY Oneonta. If it weren't for those, we wouldn't have all of the educational and social things that we have, I think. So those two colleges are important to that town, and important to me because of CGP and getting me in here. So
now you've done a lot of work with CGP students. Have you met any really exceptional CGP students or any memorable ones?
Yes, I would say. So let me think, who would I want to say? You want me to name some, if I can think of some?
Yes.
A lot of them have gone off to really good careers. And sometimes I don't exactly know where they end up and what they're doing. You know, they go to one place and they move to another. Brian Richards graduated a couple of years ago and got a job. They're just starting a big baseball museum and hired him to be the one to start it. That's, I think, unusual for somebody right out of this program to become head of a museum and really establishing it. Usually you have to start at a lower level and work up, but he started right there. And I think it was because of his interest in baseball. And they were looking for somebody, probably young, that could start with them and grow with them. And the ones that have a topic of interest, I think, sometimes go into something like that. David Lewis would be another one. David Lewis was handicapped. He had a crutch. But that never stopped David. He was very funny. He was always laughing. When I first heard him at his interview, he had a voice that I thought, I can't take this. I can't listen to this every day. And then I thought, I hope he doesn't get in. But he did, and he was funny, and he was great. And his big interest was firefighting. And he got a job in a firefighting museum. And is very successful at it. I think the ones that have a winning personality, sometimes, you know, they can have it easier of convincing somebody that they're good if they have a winning personality. If they're more shy, like I was, I thought I'd never get a job. I didn't think I'd ever be able to convince anybody that I knew anything. I didn't think I knew anything, so I didn't think I'd ever get a position anywhere. But so it took a while, but I think once you get so you have some field of expertise, then you're more marketable.
Do you find any of the current students have winning personalities?
I must say that, and it's not just because John's doing this interview, but this current class, they're all that way. There isn't anybody, I mean, usually there's somebody that we say, I can't wait for that person to graduate. Or, oh, this class is driving me nuts. The class we have right now, I can't pick out anybody that isn't really fun to have around. So I think they're all going to go somewhere. Except I don't want them to, because I want them all to stay. It is hard, I think, every year when they get ready to leave, because you have worked with them for 2 years, gotten to know them, they become your friends, and it's hard to have them leave. I always feel like crying sometimes, because your friends are going off, and they're going, but you're happy for them because they're going to start their careers, and you know there's another group coming. But every year it just seems like, oh, another group cannot take the place of this one that's leaving, but they do. I should know that by now, but it still feels that way every year. So I'm glad it's a two-year program, so you get to stay around longer. But that also means you get to know them better, and then it's harder when they leave. So anyway, I'm not just saying that because you're in this class, but it really is a good class.
Well, thanks. Do you keep in touch with the former students that you've worked with?
I wish I did better at that. I love it when they come back to see us. We do try to keep in touch, and I must admit, I got on Facebook last year, and I'm no technology person, but the ladies in the development department said, you've got to know Facebook, because I was on some technology committee, and they said, you've got to know Facebook, so they got me on Facebook. And I didn't even start looking for friends, but you have to pick a couple of things you're interested in. I put Cooperstown Graduate Program on as one of my things. Immediately, the alumni started sending in, will you be my friend? Will you be my friend? I made so many connections with alumni in the program. I've got lots of them. And the current students, too. I mean, that's the biggest number of things on my Facebook is CGP students. And that was a way to really reconnect with a lot of them. One that I hope to reconnect with that I felt like I wish I had kept in touch better was Jeff Bleemeister. Was, I thought, a really good student when he was here, and I thought a lot of him, and I'm not just sure where he is, and I hope that I will be able to make a reconnection and tell him that I miss him here and wish that he, I hope he's doing well, but I think he is. And there are certainly others like that. John Pentangelo of a few years ago, and I see he's making a success of himself, and I know they're worried when they're graduating, are they going to find a job? Are they going to be a success? But most of them are.
What were some of the more interesting theses that you've come across?
Oh, I was just saying a little while ago, some theses seem to have a life after the student is finished with it, and some don't. Sylvia Hollis's thesis on the history of African Americans in Cooperstown. It's got such good information that we use it all the time. Then there's one by Wiest, W-I-I-S-T, History of the Finney Publishing Company in Cooperstown. And it has a list of all the things that were published in Cooperstown. We use it all the time. Salvatore Salella's thesis on the 121st Regiment in the Civil War. We use that all the time. And he's just published that as a book. Sometimes these theses do go on to be books. Lee Jones did one on wall stenciling. And she went around and got examples of wall stencils on all building old buildings all around the state, some of which are probably torn down and lost, but she preserved the stencils, and that one people request every once in a while. So there are some that are become very useful, and some of them, their use was to get the person the degree, and they don't have a big use afterward. And those, I think, are more things like maybe a case study or the study of some museum. It might even be helpful to that museum, but it doesn't have a big use beyond that. That doesn't mean it isn't good or isn't important. But some just seem to have more research value than others. I think the more history-oriented ones. The museum-oriented ones will be more interesting to the museum they're about. Sometimes upcoming students want to see what students have already done on museums as they're trying to figure out what they're going to do. But things, I think, sometimes they change so fast in the museum world that they could become dated soon, too. I think the thesis of students that were doing museum-oriented ones when I came here, they're probably so outdated they wouldn't be used now. But that doesn't mean they weren't good at the time.
Are you finding that thesis is done in the past few years? They're really diverse and they bring in new ideas?
I think they are diverse. It surprises me the different things that people think of to do thesis about. There was a time when it seemed like people were picking topics for thesis that we didn't have the resources here. Those were harder to work with those students because we didn't have the things to help them, and we'd have to do a lot of interlibrary loan. And I remember some of the librarians being swamped with interlibrary loan requests because we were trying to get all this stuff that wasn't our focus. I think we do better when they, if they want us to help them, if they pick something that we have material, we can help them. And sometimes they can pick topics where they can find their sources elsewhere and they don't need ours so much, but the ones that pick a topic and they need to do the research here, that makes it a little harder.
What were some of those topics?
The one I'm thinking of was, it was an ethnic group that lived, it seems like, I don't remember what the ethnic group was, but ethnic group in Albany, it seems like it was some Caribbean group that lived in the Albany area. And we didn't have anything on ethnic groups like that here. So she was, either had to travel a lot or ask us to do a lot of interlibrary loan. And some of those things just weren't loanable in libraries, which meant she had to probably ended up having to do a lot of traveling to get the sources she wanted. That's the one I remember in particular.
Have you enjoyed your experience with CGP and Nisha?
Yes, I mean, any experience has its difficulties, I think. But overall, yes, I've enjoyed it. I mean, I think about my first idea of becoming an English teacher or becoming a school librarian. Well, I get to work in an educational institution here. I get to be a school librarian, although it's not the kind of school I thought I would be. Graduate program, I can't imagine being I never would have dreamed I would be the librarian for a graduate program. That I would have that, I don't know, stature of a position. But the things you learn from it, I sometimes I think about whether I would like to stop working, retire, but if I do, I've got to make sure I've got a real plan, because now I've got something that I think is worthwhile and I'm doing, and I don't want to give it up and not have something worthwhile. So that's one thing that keeps me going, is I think what I'm doing is a worthwhile thing. It gives me pleasure, and I think I'm helping other people. So that's, I think, is what it, one thing it does for me. It just keeps me going because I like it. There certainly are challenges. One of the bigger challenges I had was just this year when we had to move the whole graduate program into this building. I think that was one of the hardest things we had to do. One, because this building is full of material. I had a hard time figuring out where we're going to put more material, and then all of a sudden they said you had to bring a graduate program in. That was not easy. And everybody had different ideas about how it was going to be and which rooms they had to have, and trying to keep everybody happy wasn't easy. Trying to do the physical labor of moving everything wasn't easy. Trying to work with the facilities crew that had to do some of the moving. It was one of the hardest things I think we had to do, and I think we did it pretty well. I sometimes feel badly that the program is crowded, I think. We don't have as much seating for students to sit down and work. We don't have as much quiet space, because we had to put library materials in those spaces so we could empty the rooms for the offices. So I'm hoping that the current students feel this is a good experience, because I think we're in some ways not providing what I'd like to provide to the students, but we seem to be making it work and everybody seems to be coping with it well. I think it was probably harder in the second year students, because they had their own building before and they didn't have a cramped library with no place to sit down, whereas incoming students never experienced that, so they didn't know what they had before, what they lost. So the second year students, I think, have handled it pretty well too, but it has been hard. We did get a few more library aides to help us, which I thought was going to be good, but there is a lot of work that graduate students have to do, and a lot of classes and field trips, and so the workers don't always get to come and work, even though they want to. They can't always get here. I remember taking a workshop on working with volunteers and student assistants years ago, and the one thing I got out of it was the teacher said, "Now remember, the graduate students you have working for you, their number one priority is not shelving books in your library. It's doing their schoolwork. So you got to remember that." And I try to remember that. And so when they don't show up to work when I think they're going to, I keep thinking of that lady. Yeah, I know they're doing something that's more important. That's their schoolwork. Although I still need to get the bookshelf somehow, I realize why they don't show up. And I'm glad I took that little workshop, because it gives me a different outlook on the students, and I know what they're going through. Even this year, I noticed every year it happens. Mid-October, the students start to get nervous and antsy and swamped with work, and it happened again this year. Just about the same time, I could see them beginning to get frustrated because of all the work they had to do. So I understand that students just, it's an exhilarating time for students, I think, but it isn't easy.
Having worked with graduate students for such a long time, is there any advice that you'd give to brand new students when they first start off in September?
I remember sometimes they'd get all worried about the reserve readings. They'd be fighting over copies.